Good evening and welcome to Scratched Up Radio Theater. Before we begin tonight's presentation, Heavenly Body, a little background seems appropriate. Tonight's play was written by a local author, Charlie Finkel. Charlie has been a pilot for 53 years. His continuing career as a pilot includes, for a period of time, joining the crew of the Heavenly Body, a restored World War II B-25 bomber, and flying that plane from air show to air show. Flying this plane called upon Charlie's imagination to create a work of historical fiction based on what it might have been like to be a crew member of that plane flying an actual mission against the Japanese forces in World War II and what might have happened. Tonight's show is taken from that larger body of work. Sit back and imagine an airbase in the South Pacific. The date is April 4th, 1945, and we are about to join the crew of the Heavenly Body as they fly their mission to destroy Japanese ships anchored at Mako Harbor on Bokotu Island.
Meteors laced the crystal clear pre-dawn sky. The Japanese sailor lay on deck listening to wavelets lap against his ship in Mako Harbor, just outside the town of Bokoto. He heard splashes in the calm harbor water as fish jumped to eat, and then jumped again to avoid being eaten. He hadn't slept all night, anxious in the anticipation of finally sailing home to his family. It was April 4th, 1945, and his war had been long and difficult. There had been many narrow escapes from marauding American airplanes. He had seen too many friends die from bombs and exploding ships. Now the Americans had recaptured the Philippines, and it was evident that soon Japan would be forced to relinquish its honor and bow at the feet of the conquerors. Although his return to the homeland would be seen by many as a disgrace, the sailor cared only that he had survived. As the sailor looked up at countless stars, thinking of his home and the family he missed so dearly, on Luzon Island in the Philippines, B-25 aircraft from the 498th Squadron of the 345th Bomb Group prepared to take off on a mission to obliterate his ship, along with all others resting at anchor in the harbor, as well as their crews.
Wake up, sir. It's time for the 0430 briefing.
Jeez, you woke me up in the middle of a great dream. What time is it?
0400, sir. You have just enough time to hit the head, wash up, and get yourself some coffee in the mess tent. Mission briefing is at 0430 in the op tent.
Lieutenant William Brand reluctantly pulled himself off the canvas cot, washed, shaved, grabbed his coffee, and made his way to the operations tent for the mission briefing.
Okay, men. Today we are headed to Mako Harbor to bomb what's left of the Jap shipping docked and anchored there. Our B-25s are perfect for the mission. You'll be using the 50 caliber machine guns in the nose and the side packs for strafing the ships. Each aircraft is being loaded with two 500-pound bombs. The target is about 500 miles north. Proceed low level along the east coast of Bokoto Island and then swing around the peninsula to make a pass over the harbor from the north, dropping bombs and strafing as you reach the pier. Aim for shipping targets and try to avoid any land-based casualties, as there's a lot of innocents there. Six B-25s are assigned to the mission. Lieutenant Brand will lead the group in Heavenly Body. Accompanying his lead aircraft will be Betsy's Boy, Dirty Head Debbie, Pacific Patty, Down and Out, and Olive Oil. The bomb run will be made in three two-plane elements. Heavenly Body and Betsy's Boy will make the first run. You guys decide amongst yourselves who follows. And take the intelligence reports and sync your watches. Navigators, grab maps as you leave. Departure time is 0530, so do what you have to ready yourselves and your aircraft. Any questions? Hearing none, you're all dismissed. And good luck. And one more thing. I expect to see you all back here for chow this evening.
Ugh, I'm sick of this tropical stench. These pungent odors and thick humidity are driving me crazy. It's a heck of a lot different from where I grew up in Northern California. There, the mountain air is dry and smells of pine cones, not rotting plants and animals.
Well, I grew up in Louisiana, and I'm right at home here. I love this weather.
You're a great co-pilot, Kip, but we sure have different tastes. Vince, you're the crew chief. You decide. Is this good or bad weather?
Sir, I'm a crew chief, not a weather expert. My job is to look after Heavenly Body and man the Top Gun turret. We all have different tastes. Me, I kind of like the warm weather and tropical ocean breezes. Nothing like this where I come from in North Dakota.
It was still dark as the ground crewmen turned by hand the large Hamilton Standard propeller blades to help prevent engine-destroying hydraulic lock when they were started. Oil dripped to the ground from the lower cylinder exhaust stacks. After pre-flighting using ambient ramp light and flashlights, the pilots and other crew climbed into their B-25s using the forward and aft ladders protruding from the bomber's belly. Once all were on board, the ladders were raised, stowed, and all hatches shut tight.
Clear right!
Stevens yelled from his open side window to warn anyone on the ground that the three huge propeller blades on the right engine would be starting to rotate.
It's all clear, Skipper. Go ahead and start the right engine.
Batteries and generators turned on. Throttle forward about half an inch. Propeller lever full forward. Fuel boost pump for the right engine on normal. And then emergency to assure adequate fuel pressure. Fuel pressure gauge confirms 22 PSI.
With one hand, Brand pushed the spring-loaded engine primer switch to the right position, and with the other, he energized the starter switch. The props began to slowly turn, and when the engine caught, Kip Stevens moved the red fuel mixture handle halfway up to the ground idle cruise position. As 14 cylinders coughed to life, smoke and flames belched from the exhausts. Secure in their minds that on this startup there would be no engine fire, the two ground crewmen stationed in front of the right engine next to a cart-mounted fire extinguisher repositioned to the left side of Heavenly Body. Lieutenant Brand stuck his left arm out of his opened window and circled with his index finger to signify commencement of the starting ritual on the left 1,700 horsepower engine. The flight of six departed the packed dirt runway without incident and climbed to 3,000 feet on a northerly heading towards their objective. The crew's checklist complete, there was nothing to do except stay on course and keep a lookout for any remnant Jap fighters lurking about.
All right, Kip. Bring the props back to 1,900 RPMs for a long-range cruise speed of about 220 miles per hour. Get them synced, will ya? The throbbing of out-of-sync propellers drives me nuts.
You got it, Skipper.
Okay, Kip. You've got the controls.
As the B-25s cruised in formation, skimming the tops of early morning low-level, blossoming cumulus clouds, Bill Brand thought about his future after the war, and the past that brought him to the left front seat of a Mitchell bomber about to attack ships off the coast of Formosa. The crow's feet stretching out from the corner of his eyes belied the fact that he was only 21 years old. Yet here he was, commanding a 34,000-pound bomber, its crew, and acting as flight leader over five other aircraft on a mission that most likely would end in death of the enemy, perhaps some of his men, and maybe even himself. He had witnessed death and destruction too many times and was growing weary of war.
When this damned war is over, I'm going to finish college. Maybe I'll work in the logging industry like my dad and granddad. I'm going to hike in the Trinity Alps and go skinny dipping in the mountain lakes with my wife.
Well, that sounds a heck of a lot better than bombing and strafing Jap ships.
Man, it's been a long war. It seems like yesterday that I signed up with the Corps to be a pilot. I loved the initial training at Eagle Field, not too far from Sacramento. As soon as they let me fly solo, I'd fly those Ryan PT-22s all over the valley, buzzing cars and trucks. Man, that was fun. I tried to get into fighters, but they told me good bomber pilots is what they needed, and here I am.
How'd you meet your wife, Skipper?
It was during my instruction at Eagle Field. Me and some buddies drove to San Francisco for a weekend of rest and recuperation. Jane was a volunteer at a USO chapter. We swaggered in for directions and refreshments like only a bunch of cocky, fledgling aces could do. I took one look at that gal and bang, I was smitten. In a few weeks, we got hitched. We had a short one-day honeymoon in the Napa Valley, and then Jane accompanied me to Walterboro, South Carolina, where I joined up with the squadron of B-25s as part of the 345th Bomb Group. When I got promoted to lieutenant and command pilot of a new B-25, I named her Heavenly Body, in honor of my wife.
Oh, how sweet.
I blindfolded Janie and drove her in a Jeep out to the B-25. Then I took off the blindfold and said, "All right, Janie, take a look." It took a few seconds for her eyes to adjust to the bright light of the crisp, sunny day. "Is that me?" she shouted. "What do you think? Looks just like you, doesn't it? I answered. Whenever I look at you, Janie, I thank God that he brought such an angel into my life. That's why I named her Heavenly Body.
Looks like we're coming up on the island.
Damn, I want this to be over. I want to get home, squeeze my wife and smell her fresh washed hair. I want to see my baby. All right, everyone, let's look sharp. Gunners at your positions. I'll take the controls, Kip. We will hug the east coast at 500 feet and come in over target from the north, diving down as necessary.
Kip knew to keep one hand close to the control wheel and his feet lightly on the rudders, even though Brand was now doing the flying. If Brand got hit, Kip would immediately have to take control of the low-level bomber or risk loss of control, which would probably be fatal. Lieutenant Brand spoke into his microphone, pushing a button which allowed communication to the other aircraft's pilots. He tried hard to keep any sign of nervousness or apprehension out of his voice, though in reality he was more scared than he had been in a long time.
Group into twos as planned. Betsy's boy on my right and will go in first. Men, let's sink the crap out of them.
The B-25 swept in over the town on their way to the harbor. First Lieutenant Richard Pullman, in command of Betsy's boy, was first to let loose two 500-pound bombs. One struck the main pier, connecting the harbor business district to visiting ships, destroying it in a blast of splintered wood. The other bomb dropped harmlessly in the harbor, close to the Japanese tanker Kinku Maru, which had been docked adjacent to the pier to unload its cargo of fuel oil. Although most in town and aboard the docked ships had still been asleep when the raid commenced, there were alert Japanese soldiers stationed at three anti-aircraft gun positions around the harbor. Ground gunners took aim and fired away at the bombers, swooping low at over 250 miles per hour. The Japanese gunners knew that striking such a target was more luck than skill, and blasted away to see if they could hit upon the good fortune of downing an enemy bomber.
Bomb bay open. Vince, get up in the top gun turret.
Bomb bay open.
You got her, Cap. That ship split in half and sinking fast.
Bank left. Quick. Flak got Betsy's boy's wing. It's folding right over the damn plane. Bank left now.
Jeez! That wing tore off the plane and missed us by inches. Christ, that was close.
Betsy's boy is gone. Crashed in the harbor. Doesn't look like any survivors.
The battle left no time to lament over the fate of Betsy Boy's crew. An anti-aircraft shell pierced the aluminum front hatch door located in a well behind Brand and his co-pilot and exploded inside Heavenly Body. A hydraulic reservoir ruptured, spewing 4.5 gallons of hydraulic fluid everywhere in sight. Red hot shards of shrapnel propelled through the cockpit and sliced into the legs and lower torso of Vince Vannetti, who was standing on the crew seat adjacent to where the shell exploded. What was left of his body crumpled out of the top turret and down into the well where the entrance hatch had been. The bloody mess, which were seconds before his legs, dropped between the jagged edges left in the hatch and out into the bomber's slipstream. The airflow sucked the remainder of Vannetti's limp body out of the aircraft and down into the harbor. Brand saw none of Vannetti's fate. Pieces of the anti-aircraft shell had lodged themselves in his head, neck, and arms, and he was bleeding profusely. He was losing strength and starting to lapse into shock. But Heavenly Body was still flying, and it was his job to bring her and its crew back to base.
Fly the airplane. Fly the airplane.
Brand had been admonished repeatedly in training that when there is an emergency, first and foremost is to fly the airplane. Too many planes crashed, especially during training exercises, because pilots fixated on a problem rather than doing what was most important, maintaining control of the airplane. Off his left side, he sensed flames and turned his head to see the left engine on fire.
We've got a fire, Kip. Engine fire checklist now. Come on, Kip. Help me keep her flying.
It was obvious why Kip had not responded. He sat limp in his seat, slouched as far forward as the shoulder harnesses allowed. At first, Brand thought his friend was dead, there being blood all over the windows. But when he turned around, he saw the gaping hole where the entrance hatch had been, as well as the shattered hydraulic fluid reservoir, which was the source of most of the red liquid splashed onto the windows, nearly obscuring his vision outside. Kip began to move slightly and was clearly still alive, but there was no way he was going to help get Heavenly Body and what was left of her crew safely on the ground. Brand had neither the time nor the energy to go searching for the emergency checklist, so he had to perform as was ingrained during training. The drag from the useless spinning propellers was slowing them to the point where if he didn't work fast, control would be lost. He pulled the left propeller lever all the way back to the feather position, which, if working, would turn the propeller blades to stop their windmilling and create the least amount of drag possible. As soon as he did, the props stopped rotating and he could feel a reduction of yawing toward the useless engine. Next, he pulled the left red mixture handle back to cut off the flow of fuel to the damaged engine. He continued to mentally engage the memorized emergency checklist while fighting to keep enough pressure on the control yoke and rudder pedals to maintain control.
Fuel boosts to pump off. Fuel shut off. Fire extinguisher engaged. Cowl flaps closed to reduce drag. Maximize power on the operating engine to keep the plane flying. Okay, she's still flying. Gotta get her back to San Marcelino.
Brand was unable to communicate with the crew in the rear of the aircraft or the pilots of the other B-25 since the radios were destroyed by the blast. Sergeant Ken Manning, the navigator, had been stationed at the left waist gunner position during the bombing run and saw the explosion behind the cockpit. He motioned to the two other crew members in the back of the plane that he was going forward and crawled through the tunnel on top of the bomb bay. They had each donned their parachutes, but the plane was flying so low that jumping out would be a fatal mistake. A pool of blood lay in Manning's path underneath the top turret, which he tried as best as possible to avoid as he wiggled out of the passageway opening and down under the canvas-padded seat above and behind what had been the front crew entrance. Manning could see the clear blue water of the South China Sea passing beneath as he held fast to the sides of the plane's interior.
Are you okay?
I think so. I'm in pain and getting pretty weak, but I think I can get us home.
Brand wiped slick red hydraulic fluid off the altimeter and airspeed indicator with his hand. The windshield and his side window remained clear enough to see outside. Altitude wavered between 400 to 500 feet, and airspeed was steady at 150 miles per hour. The minimum controllable airspeed was 145, and it was critical to remain above that speed while flying on one engine. Any lower, and the thrust from the right engine would overcome the air pressure, passing over the twin vertical stabilizers and attached rudders on the tail, causing them to crash. Brand was using what was left of his strength to push on the right rudder pedal to keep the nose of the B-25 from yawing left. He turned the rudder trim control, located on the floor between the seats, as far as he could to relieve pressure, but he still had to push with his right leg. Airspeed and altitude were critical, and Brand fought as hard as he could to keep Heavenly Body flying, just as he had been trained. Manning could see Kip Stevens slumped in the co-pilot seat and realized Lieutenant Brand was struggling to maintain control of the bomber. It was obvious that he could not be heard over the roar of engines, props, and air rushing in through the blown-out hatch, so he maneuvered to make his way up to the cockpit. This required him to step around the well and the opening below, and then climb under the step leading into the cockpit. The task was made more difficult by the surfaces made slick by the sprayed-out hydraulic fluid. Cautiously, Manning stepped down off the crew seat and worked his way around the well and up onto the ledge that served as access to the crawl space leading to the nose of the plane and up into the cockpit. He boosted himself up and stood between the pilot and co-pilot seats, careful not to step on the emergency hydraulic pump and brake handles.
What's going on, Bill? You okay?
I need help, Ken. I'm not sure I can keep her flying. How are the others?
I think Vince is gone. But Howell and Newworth are okay in the back. You want me to get them ready to ditch?
Not yet. But go and tell them to be ready if we start going down. We're too low to bail out, but make sure they are strapped in with May Wests on. Then come back and give me a hand.
Manning scurried back to get the others prepared as Brand continued to nurse the crippled bomber home. The alternative was ditching at sea, which under the circumstances would be difficult if not hazardous. He couldn't communicate their position, and the other bombers from the group were nowhere to be seen. If they went down, it was certainly possible they would survive the water landing, but far from clear as to what would happen then. Brand's co-pilot and best friend was critically wounded, and getting out of a sinking bomber at sea was not the best option. Brand knew that if he and his crew were able to survive a water landing, there was a risk of being picked up by the enemy. There had been much talk of what desperate Japanese soldiers did to captured airmen. He had heard of torture, forced marches, beheadings, and even cannibalism. He would keep Heavenly Body flying as long as possible, and best-case scenario, get everyone back to base. Brand steered the crippled bomber on a reciprocal course to that which got him to target. Winds and weather were not a factor, so if the engine and fuel held out, they should be able to make it. Alternatively, he could turn southwest towards China, but being uncertain of the area and whether or not the Japanese would pose a problem, he opted for familiar territory and kept heading south. The right engine continued to function, and airspeed remained above the critical minimum. Brand learned early in his training about the benefits of flying close to the ground or water as to minimize drag, so he kept the aircraft as low as possible. It appeared that there would be sufficient fuel to get them back to San Marcelino, but the big question remained whether or not he would be able to stay alert long enough to get them there. Brand was losing blood, strength, and mental acuity. Manning made his way back towards the cockpit and again positioned himself between the pilots. It was obvious that the co-pilot was still alive, and Manning considered moving him out of the seat so he could take over and assist the struggling pilot.
"I don't think I can move him. With that hole in the floor, he may fall out. What do you want me to do to help?"
"For now, stay where you are and keep me conscious. I think I can get us home."
In the distance, they both could see land, which had to be the north coast of Luzon Island. Brand had been briefed that there was a dirt strip located at Laog on the northwest corner of the Philippine island, which could be used as an emergency landing site if necessary. Landing there would save about an hour flying time.
I'm starting to lose it, Ken.
"Oh, stay with it, Bill. Tell me what you want me to do. I see a strip, 11 o'clock, over there."
Brand was still keeping the airplane flying, using every bit of his remaining concentration.
"Without hydraulics, we have to pump the landing gear down. You'll have to do it, Ken. Start pumping the gear down."
Manning reached down to the handle and started pumping as hard and fast as he could. He looked out the right window to see if the landing gear was extending, but it wasn't.
"Nothing's happening. Gear's not coming down. What do you want me to do, Bill?"
They were quickly approaching the dirt strip and were committed to a landing. There would be no going around on one engine. With no time to search for the emergency landing checklist, Brand tried to think.
"The emergency selector valve. I didn't switch it. There's no time now. The end of the strip is almost below the nose. I've got to belly land it. We're going in. Gear up. Brace yourself as best as you can."
"Hang on and back. We're going in. Gear up."
The navigator reached down to the lever on the left side of the co-pilot seat and made sure Kip's shoulder harness was locked. He did the same on Brand's seat.
"I need both hands on the control yoke, Ken. When I tell you, pull the throttle on the right engine all the way back."
Heavenly Body came over the beach and crossed the edge of the dirt strip at about 50 feet. Brand had maintained his airspeed and heading. He now tried to drop the bomber onto the field with minimum impact.
"Now, cut the throttle."
Ken Manning did as he was told, then grabbed onto the sides of the seats to brace himself. When the power was cut, all remaining lift to keep the airplane flying disappeared, and she dropped down onto the dirt. The propeller blades on the right engine dug into the ground and came to a stop. The friction began to slow the plane, but it became apparent there would not be enough room to stop. Brand's vision was fading, and he was on the verge of blacking out due to loss of blood. But Manning was able to look out the windshield and see the rapidly approaching trees. They were just passengers now. There was nothing that could be done to control the fate of the bomber. Speed continued to dissipate, but they were still going 40 miles per hour when the left wing struck the first palm tree. The plane spun hard to the left and came to an abrupt stop. Manning was able to keep from flailing around in the cockpit by keeping a firm grip on the seats. Kip Stevens was held fairly secure in his seat by the harness and still appeared to be breathing. Brand, however, was still. Manning looked over at Brand's motionless body and hoped he was still alive.
"Let's get out of here, Bill. Bill, come on. Bill?"
There was no reply. Manning could see the blood-smeared side window where Brand's head had smashed into the glass during the crash landing. He was not breathing. Lieutenant Brand's hands remained wrapped tight around the flight control wheel. As with the many Japanese soldiers and sailors who lost their lives to Heavenly Body's bullets and bombs, Lieutenant Brand's war was now over, and neither he nor the aircraft would be going home.
Tonight's show featured John Welsh as the narrator, Charlie Finkel as the operations officer, Ian Delziel as Lieutenant Bill Brand, Dustin Davis as Kip Stevens and also the operations clerk, Bob Christensen as Vince Finetti, and Jim Dowling as Ken Manning. The show was directed and soundscape created by Charlie Finkel. Technical production, as always, by Lily Dubois. The Scratched Up Radio Theater Players are going live. We would like to invite you to attend a live onstage performance by Scratched Up Radio Theater at the Mountain Community Center in Round Mountain. Plan an early Valentine's Day for Saturday, February 8th, 2020. In addition to our live play, dinner will be served. Ribs, beans, salad, and cornbread. Pie, beer, wine, soft drinks, and coffee will be available for purchase. The Mountain Community Center is located on Highway 299 East between Round Mountain and Montgomery Creek. Doors open at 3 p.m. and dinner will be served at 4. The show will start at approximately 5 p.m. Reservations are required for the dinner. In a moment, I will give you the number to call for reservations, so please have pen and paper ready. Dinner and show together are $20 per person, and reservations required. The show by itself is $7.50 per person. No reservations are needed. For reservations, here's the number. Please call 530-337-1101 and leave a message. You might also call 530-941-9689. We will get back to you soon. The evening will feature three radio plays written by local authors performed as if the actors are in the studio recording the show. The first, Spare My Brother, is a work of historical fiction based on Shasta County history, written by Jim Dowling. Following is Seance, a work of science fiction written by Chris Gomez. And closing is The Troublemaker, a fantasy piece written by the late Bill Seymour. We are looking forward to a great meal, good company, and a fun time performing. We hope you will join us. This is your host, Dickie Magadoff, wishing you all the best year you can possibly imagine from those of us at Scratched Up Radio Theater. As we at KKRN frequently remind you, we are an all-volunteer-staffed enterprise and entirely dependent on you, our listeners, and the businesses who support KKRN through underwriting for our financial well-being. In addition to coming to our play, or if you can't make it, please consider going to kkrn.org and clicking on the donate button. Or you could just send a check to KKRN, Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California. ¶¶